Hey there, everybody. It is October 17th, 2013, and you are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, send us an email on over to ken@thisshowisogay.com. We respond to every single email, so you send an email, you will get some sort of response. You can stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. Right there on the homepage, we are trying to raise money for the San Francisco to LA AIDS ride. So we're trying to get 1,000 folks to donate $10 each. You can find the link right there on thisshowisogay.com. You can follow us on Twitter. We use it every now and then. And, of course, go to the Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. We have a huge show for you this week. We must get started with our first guest. Sister Vicious PHB is one of the founders and original Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, a truly legendary social justice, protest, high art, thought-provoking group of performers, educators, and change agents. When I say legendary, folks, I am talking one of the most pivotal and inspiring pieces of our LGBT history. This is one of those intros that I actually could spend the entire episode gushing through, but then we would have no time to talk, and we have decades of history to discuss. So, Sister, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Yes, my full name is Sister Vicious Power Hungry.
I know, but we have to be, you know, slightly FCC approved, so I would have to bleep that, I know.
Oh, dear, oh, no. Okay, well, I've taken a new name, Vishnu, K-N-E-W, because everybody asked me, well, did you know it would grow this large and last this long? And I said, yeah, I knew.
I could go with Vishnu. I kind of like that one.
Yeah.
Well, we have so much to discuss. Are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
All right. So we're going to go back to the late 70s. First, I'm learning that you moved to San Francisco from Iowa City.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So was that your city of upbringing?
Yes. It was a very liberal enclave. It's the University of Iowa. And we were doing some drag shows, and we had there were four of us. And the woman in the group said, well, I know Mother Superior from a local Catholic convent. And when the nuns die, they put the habits in storage. Maybe I can get those habits. And we said, well, we don't know what we're going to do with them, but yeah, get them. We'll work a routine around them. She went to the convent and told her the Mother Superior we were doing the Sound of Music.
Of course you were.
And we still have those habits in our archives here in San Francisco. And we did a pom-pom routine. So when I moved, I was living on a gay farm, and I went to San Francisco for a visit and decided to stay and went back and got my clothes. And the habits were the only drag I took along. And in those days, the San Francisco scene was very Castro clone. You know, everyone kind of looked alike, thought alike, talked alike, acted alike. And we got really bored with it. And so I said, well, let's throw these on. It was Easter 1979, and let's go out. And the psychological car wrecks in liberal San Francisco made us scratch our heads, like, what just happened?
Yeah.
Let's make a group out of this, and let's do something, you know, good for the community with it. So Easter 79, Easter every year is worldwide is celebrated as our founding.
Wow. Well, let's, by the way, I'm going to breeze past the fact that you said you were on a gay farm. I don't even know what that means, but we don't even have time for the gay farm.
Yeah. The whole radical fairy scene is a totally different topic, but a lot of radical fairies joined the sisters in the early days.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. All right. But let's take it back. All right. We are in San Francisco. It is the late 70s. How do you even begin to describe it?
Well, like I said, everyone pretty much thought alike. Conformity was the rule of the day. And when we made the scene, we were an anomaly. But the community embraced us as cute, clever little mascots, you know. And from the very beginning, we used our sisterhood for charity fundraising.
Yeah.
And we did the first fundraiser for Gay Olympics, which became Gay Games. And we did the world's very first safe sex pamphlet called Playfair, which is now in its fifth printing. And that was in 1981. And we did the world's first AIDS fundraiser. It was 1981 before the AIDS acronym was created. There was the KS Foundation here, which became the AIDS Foundation. And we did a dog show on Castro Street, blocked the street off. Shirley MacLaine, the actress, was one of our MCs with Sister Boom Boom.
Oh, wow.
And Sylvester was a judge, the singer, Sylvester.
Oh, yeah.
We did a couple of those fundraisers for when AIDS came along. And then pretty much in the early 80s, AIDS fundraising was a lot of what we did.
Now, in the late 70s, the sisters came about not that long after Harvey Milk was assassinated.
Yeah, that's right. They have a sister in the film Milk, but, you know, we didn't exist at that point in 1978.
Right.
But Sister Boom Boom ran for city supervisor in 1982 and got more votes than Dan White, who did back in 77 when he ran for supervisor. And Dan White, you know, was the assassin of the mayor and Harvey Milk.
Talk to me about that time in San Francisco. So Harvey Milk's been assassinated. It's before the sisters came about. But, you know, I wasn't there, and it's just so amazing to talk to someone who was there at that time. You read about, well, the community really came together around that. Is that what you experienced?
Yes. I arrived just at the right time, 1977, and Harvey Milk was leading protests of thousands of people because Anita Bryant was on the warpath in Miami. And there was a threat of revoking gay rights ordinances in cities across the country. And so it was a very intense political time, but also very intense cultural time. You know, everyone in Iowa City, all of a sudden, people were leaving. And I said, well, where are people going? Well, three-fourths are going to San Francisco, and another fourth are going to New York. And when I arrived in San Francisco, there were literally busloads of gay men from the Midwest arriving. And it was an atmosphere of artistic and cultural and sexual experimentation.
Yeah.
Everything was possible. It was exploding with energy. It was a really creative time.
Unbelievable.
Very creative time.
I should back up a step. For folks who have never seen the sisters before, how would you describe them?
Well, we take the iconic images of the nun, and then we have complete creative freedom because freedom of expression is really what the fundamental thing that we're about. And we take that iconic image and then transform it. We rarely wear the traditional black and white habits.
Okay.
So we wear the wimple and the veil. And then, you know, fishnet nylons and glitter and rhinestones and we make it very abstract. So you don't really look like nuns except for the wimple and the veil.
Right. Now, as you've already gone through, gosh, I have to tell you, I'm going to be very upfront with you. I'm a little bit overwhelmed talking to you, and I've been doing this show for 5+ years now, but this is core LGBT history.
Yeah, we have a huge archives, too. We document everything, save everything. But, you know, like I said, it was a very, even though it was a very creative environment here in San Francisco, you know, in the early 70s, you had the Cockettes and you had a lot of guerrilla theater, you know, organizations, the Angels of Light.
Yeah.
And then it moved into a very conformist, you know, everybody wanted to be in a group. And
right.
It was groupthink. And so we really felt like we needed some creative outlet again at the end of the 70s. And you know, that's how the sisters came about. And then we tried to use that for the betterment of the community.
Right.
Our mission is promulgation of universal joy and the expiation of stigmatic guilt. So we are social activists. We're community charity organization.
Yeah.
And we're dedicated to spiritual enlightenment. And there are a lot of traditions in the sisters. A lot of us meditate. So we have a Buddhist monk. There's Hindu tradition. There's a pagan tradition. We borrow from a lot of different traditions, not just the Catholic iconic images. And we definitely honor the role of the Catholic nun in serving the worldwide community, and that's pretty much what we emulate.
Well, we can't talk about the 80s without talking, and you certainly mentioned it, without talking about HIV and AIDS. You know, I get so worried sometimes, sister, that we're just talking about the history books and we're losing the human element of talking about the 80s and the actual devastation that happened. What would you tell, in particular, our younger listeners about that time?
Well, you know, in the early 80s, it was really a war zone here in San Francisco. You know, people would be diagnosed and they'd be dead in a month, you know?
My gosh.
With no treatments. A lot of sisters got ill, and the community really stepped up and took care of those members who were getting ill. There was kind of a sexism in the gay community, gay men's attitude toward lesbians and women in general, and that kind of all dissolved when the crisis came along, because we all realized that we got to hang together, or they're going to hang us separately, right?
Right, right.
So we all pulled together and creating these incredible care institutions, you know, hospices and the AIDS Foundation and all of the various apparatus, so that not only were people taken care of health-wise, but so that our community could survive, because we really weren't sure if we were going to survive. And then later in the 80s, around 87, of course, along came ACT UP.
Right.
And they really followed our sister traditions of using guerrilla theater to address social issues, and they used our methods. Because ACT UP had a lot of theater when you know, they went and confronted the FDA and confronted, you know, what the government wasn't doing to come up with medicines. Also came Queer Nation, because Queer Nation split off of ACT UP in the late 80s, and they wanted to address just gay issues, not so much AIDS issues, but gay issues.
Right.
And you know, by the end of the 90s, we realized, and that was the younger generation coming along, who stepped right up and started taking on these issues with ACT UP and Queer Nation. And so, you know, by 1990, we realized we were going to survive as a community, but, you know, we still really needed to pressure the government to create some effective treatments for this disease. And the whole time, of course, the sisters were doing lots of fundraisers for AIDS.
Oh, I bet. I bet. I've been reading all about it. Let's talk about some other milestones, some sister milestones. And again, this is just LGBT history. Did I mention how excited I am to speak with you?
Yeah.
Just want to put that out there. 1984, we have a bit of an exorcism of Jerry Falwell. Talk to us about that.
Well, in 1984, the Democratic Convention was in San Francisco. And Jerry Falwell, of course, from Moral Majority, and Phyllis Schlafly, who was key in defeating the Equal Rights Amendment.
Right.
So in Union Square, which is a large open square in the center of the city, you had a stage, and we performed an exorcism of both of them, hoping to exorcise their demons so that they might see the light.
Right.
People needed to come around and support the gay community, which is, you know, happening now. But we did that exorcism in Union Square. It's very theatrical. And at least half the audience was press, worldwide media. Of course, they were all here for the convention.
For the convention, yeah.
And then we went to the Republican convention that year was in Dallas, Texas. And we went there and performed an exorcism of Jerry Falwell and Phyllis Schlafly in Daly Plaza, where Kennedy was shot. And that very day was in the Loop, downtown Dallas. There were tens of thousands of people, because they were waiting for the parade of the Olympic athletes, which had happened. And so the first thing they saw were a bunch of nuns on the flatbed truck being led by, you know, 50 police motorcycles through the parade route, because we had to get to the convention site. That was the first thing they saw.
That's what we call a visual.
They weren't quite sure what this was all about. This is the opening of the parade? Really?
That's hilarious. All right, so that's 1984. In 1987, the Pope decided, hey, I'm going to go to San Francisco.
Yes. Well, in January of 87, Cardinal Ratzinger, who was the head of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith in the Vatican, which was formerly the Inquisition, and he, you know, became Pope, of course. He was the Pope before the current one.
Right.
He issued a statement from the Vatican that homosexuality was, quote, an intrinsic moral evil. Oh, and by the way, the Pope's coming to San Francisco. What? You issue that statement, and you're coming to the gayest city in the world. What do you expect? So we held a press conference about a week before he arrived. And outside of the major cathedral here, we call it Mary Maytag, because it looks like a Maytag washing machine. And I marched to the front of the cathedral, these giant doors, and posted on the door my demands that the local archdiocese disinvite the Pope. And I tacked it on with a little Lee press-on nail. And then we held an exorcism of the Pope, again, in Union Square on that stage. And the local media showed us live on TV and then immediately cut away to the Pope landing in a helicopter at Golden Gate Bridge. Jackpot!
You can't plan that any better. I must say, at this point, you got to feel like, all right, we have this exorcism thing pretty well down pat.
Yeah, we do.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And then let's do one more. And again, it's just such picking and choosing. But 1991, I really do want to talk about the Stop the Violence campaign, because that's a real impact that you all had.
Yeah, Sister Roma conceived that. They were pink triangle placards. And we put them in, we handed them out, and they were put in the windows of local businesses and in residences. And there was a long tradition in San Francisco from the early 70s. The Butterfly Brigade pioneered this, and they handed out whistles so that when somebody was attacked on the street, you blow a whistle and people would come and help you.
Yeah.
And so the community was well accustomed to hearing whistles and knowing what to do. And so we just took it a step further and put these placards in windows so that people could actually go, when they see the placard, they know that the person or the business would help them. And now the city of San Francisco has taken up this campaign, and they've designed their own placards, and they are now on a quest to put them in all the neighborhoods of San Francisco.
Amazing.
When the gay community in the Castro started evolving in the early 70s, originally the Summer of Love in Haight-Ashbury had a lot of gay people there, and when they started discovering, you know, that they were gay, and the community started forming here, a lot of young gay men from the Haight-Ashbury went over the hill to the Castro. That's how for cheap rents. And that's how the Castro started developing as a gay community. And the Castro had been a working class Irish community. And when gay men started buying the houses there, because the old Catholic Irish members of the community were wanting to sell their houses, they really didn't see the value in them, and moving to the suburbs, then more gay men started buying these houses and fixing them up. So when we started moving into the Castro, of course, there was a lot of blowback. There was a lot of violence, especially from the younger straight kids. And, you know, they'd beat people up outside of the bars in the Castro. And there was always that threat of violence for, you know, a good 10 years. It dissipated gradually.
Right.
So this anti-violence campaign was really necessary to do something about it.
Yeah. Okay, let's take a step back for a second. As you look at modern-day activism, the activism that the LGBT community is putting forth now around some of our biggest issues, when you look at this activism, what is it that you think? Knowing what you know about activism and knowing the type of activism that the sisters have pioneered, how do you feel about what you see?
You know, I was really heartened with Prop 8 in 2008. When the campaign happened, the community here was very slow to see the threat. But the National Organization of Marriage was very organized, and the local archbishop was very key in getting the Mormons on board for repealing equal marriage rights. And by we didn't think in relatively liberal California that this would pass. And the polls started changing in October, not in our favor. And suddenly panic set in, and then people started giving money, and thousands of people showing up at the No on 8 campaign in the Castro. But it was just barely too late.
Yeah.
Because we only lost by, I think probably if like 1.5% had changed their mind, we would have won. It was that close. So after it passed and everyone was in shock, that was also, the campaign when Obama was elected. So it was a very mixed feeling that night at the campaign headquarters. And we thought, well, now what do we do? And it was
right.
a young lesbian in Seattle that started posting on the internet, we're going to do these marches. And less than a week after Prop 8 passed, the calls went out for a march from City Hall to the Castro, and I'm sitting here making signs for people, and I thought, well, is anyone really going to want these signs? Is really going to be anybody there? And so I've got them all under my arm. I'm heading on the tram down Market Street, and we get down just a few blocks from City Hall, and there's a wave of people coming up the street. The tram driver was so shocked. He said, nobody get off yet. And he runs outside and he takes a look and he comes back in and he opens the doors and I got out and they just picked me clean. I mean, there must have been 100,000 people marching up the street, and a lot of them were very young, new activists, that really hadn't. And you got the feeling like these kids were just waiting for something to do.
For an opportunity, yeah.
For an opportunity. And that we marched up to the Castro, through the Castro. I mean, it was reminiscent of the days of Harvey Milk.
Wow.
And into Dolores Park, and there was a drag queen with a loud speaker system, talking about politics and about Prop 8. And then they marched all the way, this is like a mile and a half, all the way back to City Hall, and there were more speeches, and that's when I left, and they were still marching back to Castro again. I mean, they couldn't get enough activism. And I was so heartened by that. Are these kids really going to step up like ACT UP did when they came along in the late 80s? So I was very proud and very heartened, that people really saw the threat. The threat, they may not even have agreed, they may not even wanted to get married, but they saw the issue as a threat to our survival and our community. Now look where we are,
Yeah.
The right wing now have decided, okay, we lost that one. We lost that cultural war. Now we want to put something on the ballot about transgenders. So now the new fight, they're collecting signatures because our governor signed a law allowing transgenders to participate in sports and use bathrooms that is appropriate to their gender,
mm-hmm.
their gender identity.
Mm-hmm.
And now the right wing is trying to put a proposition on the ballot to reverse that. So they think, the right wing thinks, that transgenders are more vulnerable now because the public is not so educated about it. But, every time there's an electoral fight over these cultural issues, it is an opportunity for us to educate people.
Right.
So we lose until we win.
Yeah. Even on a personal level, that story is just, I actually needed to hear that myself, just because I think I get down sometimes of, gosh, is there still the inspired activism that we read about? And I'm kind of at that weird nexus where I wasn't conscious enough of the LGBT movement because I was, 6 or 7 in the 80s. And so I just didn't know about the inspired activism personally. But then I would read about it and I look around today and I sometimes think, are we still inspired in that way?
You see a lot of apathy until the need arises.
And then
every
comes.
Single time our community, usually the younger members, have stepped up and confronted the threat.
Love it.
You know, I mean, yeah, it's, you know, for a long time in the 90s and early 2000s, it's like, well, where have the activism's gone? In fact, I made a speech at the YBCA. It's like, where have all the radicals gone? Gone to bed, everyone. You know, gone to sleep, everyone. Well, that was just before Prop 8.
Right.
And boom, there it was.
And there it was. Take a minute and give some advice to our budding activists, be they young or more experienced, on what they can do better to achieve their goals.
Well, number one is creativity.
Yeah.
Use your creativity. What do you want to do? Be creative about how you do it.
That's a great one.
Yeah, and the sisters have always been about creativity. Well, you know, we always had so many ideas, we could never possibly do all of them, so we were giving away ideas to other groups. And that's the main problem in any group, is coming up with ideas.
I'm good right now, sister, on going to black tie events. I'm kind of over it. I'm good.
Why don't I tell you a little bit about how the sisterhood has grown, and
please.
Also... you know, probably listeners don't realize that we have structures in place. We're not just a bunch of ad hoc people throwing on habits.
No, there's more than the four of you who started this.
Yeah, right. Four founders. Reverend Mother died of HIV in the early 90s, but we call them grandmothers. So I'm the only grandmother left in San Francisco. We've got grandmother missionary position. Who is living on a gay farm outside of Nashville. And then we have grandmother Agnes, who now lives in New Orleans. Right now, we have about 50 orders and missions in North America.
Wow.
And we get three or four. We've got a new mission in Cleveland, Ohio.
We have to give them a shout-out. They're so excited, the Rock and Roll City Sisters.
That's right. And we have orders all around the world, Uruguay, Switzerland, Belgium, lots of them, several in Germany, several in France, England, Scotland, several in Australia. And in the United States, in North America, we've created what is called the UNPC. It's the United Nuns Privy Council. And they teleconference. It's made up of all the officially recognized orders and missions in the U.S., and they teleconference once a month to problem solve, share ideas, and the UNPC helps nurture and mentor new, what we call missions. The missions are groups of people who want to become an order in a city, and we help them go through the process of getting their 501c3 nonprofit, because we all are nonprofit,
right?
And help them with their local structures. And once that's complete, the UNPC gives the approval. San Francisco Motherhouse owns the trademark of Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. And once the UNPC is done with their work, then they recommend that the Mother House officially approve and extend the trademark to the new mission to become a fully professed order. Now, San Francisco, we have what we call aspirants. They're people who want to join the order. So they come to us, they work with us for a while, and they become a postulant. And when you're a postulant, you might do the white face, because the white face is kind of symbolic of our order, the makeup. But you don't do the wimple or veil.
Okay.
And then after a period of time, we vote to elevate that person as a novice. And the person will wear a wimple and a white veil, and then any other kind of clothing that they want. They can be totally creative about it. And after a period of time, then the general membership here votes to elevate that person to fully professed status, fully professed member. And the fully professed members can be officers. We have our abbess is mistress of ceremonies. Our secretary is the sexy Terry.
Of course.
So fully professed members have one vote and can also be officers. And that's pretty much replicated around the world now.
How many sisters would you say there are?
Oh, thousands. In San Francisco, right now we have about 90.
Yeah.
You know, after a period of time, it's such exhausting work. Some members have to take a sabbatical, and they'll disappear for a while, and then they'll come back after they've recouped their energy, because it's very exhausting being a sister.
I bet.
When you're interacting with people, a lot of energy goes out.
I'm exhausted just hearing about all the exorcisms. It's a lot. Well, I got to give you the last word on this because it is part of your mission. Tell our listening audience, because I feel like you have the answer. You have the answer. Tell us how to achieve that universal joy.
Well, you know, we created a campaign called Pull, the grandmothers did. Peace, unity, love, and laughter. Let's all pull together. And I think that's really good for the gay community as well. Quite frequently, because of internalized homophobia, you know, we're all taught to hate ourselves, and that can be played out among members of our community.
Right.
So creating peace is the first step. Once you've created peace, then you have unity. And with unity, you can do just about anything. You know, we've done amazing things. You know, we've forced the government to come up with effective treatments for HIV. We've convinced the public to support marriage equality. You can do just about anything. And then once you have unity, you start to love each other. And laughter is the final piece. Laughter is a product of feeling joy.
There it is. Well, where can folks go to learn more about all the amazing things that the sisters are doing?
The San Francisco website is thesisters.org. And on that website, we have what's called Sistery. So you can read the history from the very beginning. You can also, we have a piece that is Worldwide Orders. So you can contact all the Worldwide Orders and see wherever they're at. We also have a new online magazine. It's called OneVeil.com. And that is a monthly publication that includes all of our activities around the world.
Amazing. Well, let me tell you, I was on thesisters.org. I clicked on the Sistery. I went through that timeline, and I cannot describe to you how inspired I was. It gave me so many ideas. But more than that, I felt so appreciative for the sisters and all you've done for the community, all you continue to do for the community, and just the role that you've played as we've marched forward and used our voices to make a difference. How you all have used your voices is exactly, honestly, it is exactly why we do this show, of using your voice in a unique way to create change. I'm just so appreciative for the opportunity to have you on the show.
Well, thank you, honey. And, you know, at our last general membership, like I told our sisters, we all joined to add meaning to our lives and to do something meaningful for others.
Yeah.
And that's very joyful. You get so much out of it.
There it is.
You know, we get more out of it than probably people in the community who meet us get out of it, or at least equal.
Well, look, a pleasure indeed to have you on the show, but I mean this, an honor to have you on the show.
Well, thank you. Okay, and I hope Cleveland rocks.
It does. It does. We want to see you here soon enough.
You're gonna see sisters all over those streets very soon.
Thank you so much, sister.
Okay, bye bye.
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, more incredible conversations to come with our next guest, Elizabeth Holford. Elizabeth is the Executive Director of Equality Ohio, an organization that advocates and educates to achieve fair treatment and equal opportunity for all the folks living here in Ohio, regardless of their sexual orientation or gender identity or expression. I would like to say that by the end of our chat, she and I are going to achieve full equality here in my new home state of Ohio. No pressure, Elizabeth, but welcome to the show. Is So Gay.
Okay, no pressure at all. Thanks so much for that. Way to go.
Do you have a plan?
I do have a plan, but I'm not going to share it with you because I have to get it all done in this interview, and it's got to happen right now. So I'm just I got to go. I got to do it.
And yet, somehow we're going to take the time to do a little bit, Elizabeth Holford, This Is Your Life, because we got to go back and learn about what brought you here. I'm reading, you started out as a trial attorney.
I did.
Do you want to talk through that?
No.
Okay.
I'm a recovering attorney, so that's all right.
Although I will ask in all seriousness, how important is that background? I mean, not an uncommon background as one well-versed in the law, not an uncommon background for an executive director of an LGBT organization. How important is that piece of the puzzle for you to move things forward?
I think for me it is important, not just an understanding of, an appreciation of, and sometimes a skepticism about the law, but also I think having been a trial attorney really helped me test myself when I was pretty young.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel, I don't know if I'm exactly fearless, because anybody that's fearless is also probably foolish, but I feel like I tested my mettle pretty young, and I feel pretty comfortable both with myself but also in tight and tough situations.
Nice. Nice. Well, then, speaking of foolish, you did for a long spell what I currently do and have done my whole life. You decided to live your life on a college campus and immerse yourself in that world.
I did, and I'm very grateful for the experience. I think part of it was I had gone back to school and gotten another degree, and while I was there, I got very much mentored into the idea of academics, and it makes a lot of sense because, frankly, I think teaching and learning, which to me go together, it's you don't really teach, you learn at the same time as you're teaching, but I think that's where you really have the opportunity to affect the marketplace of ideas and really help people be critical thinkers.
Yeah. I don't get to talk about it that much on this show because I'm always talking to people who don't work in college life. As someone who has done what I do, talk to us about that particular brand of activism that we can inspire with college students, with young minds.
I think you're saying it right there. To me, it is not really about teaching people what to think at all, and it is about teaching people how to think. And one of the things that I often said when I was teaching is that I am less interested in your answers and more interested that you learn how to frame questions, because she who frames the questions frames the answers.
There you go.
That's how change really happens.
Nice, nice. And I know I'm skipping large parts of your life, and I'm sure they were incredibly enriching.
Don't say
and
large parts, because then you're making me sound like I'm like super, super old, which I am. But like, wow, way to go, Ken. I'm really comfortable with you now. Thanks.
It was great having you on the show, Elizabeth.
Yeah,
and
click.
Wouldn't be the first time, Elizabeth. It's
I'm
you
out.
Know, it's episode it's episode 234. You know, it's bound to happen. It's bound to happen. But I am going to skip ahead. I'm going to skip ahead because
okay.
We do have so much to talk about Ohio, because I live here now and I don't really understand it. So you got to help me with that. But we're going to skip ahead to November of 2012, and that is that point where you are hired to be the executive director of O'Quality Ohio. And I know that the process, it was quite the process to secure the position.
Yes. And that has, like, no answer, but yes.
Tell me about that moment that you either saw a job ad. I would imagine someone said something to you and said, oh, yeah.
A really close friend of mine here sent it to me. And I have I have three older sisters and a younger brother. Two of my sisters live here. And surprisingly, they didn't send it to me. And now I'm going to have that talk. But a really close friend whom I love dearly sent it to me. And I think it was just sort of this, you've talked about this, you know, advocacy, and you're looking around. Would you be interested in this? And it just wasn't even a question. I was so excited.
Oh, that's fantastic. A long interview, I would assume. A whole series of chats.
There were quite a few chats, and once we started walking down the road, I think certainly the people from the board doing the interviewing and then the whole board, we reached a point where we just couldn't stop talking.
Yeah.
And that's when I think both sides sort of knew, oh, this might be a place. This might be it.
Well, you're coming up on a year, and in full disclosure, I should tell you that the board has asked me to use this as your performance appraisal, your one-year performance appraisal.
So I'm so excited.
Know that that's happening now.
Shh, it's breaking up. I can't hear you.
Yeah, because that's going to work out well for your performance appraisal. You're coming up on a year. What do you think about the last year? How do you wrap your mind around it?
I do wrap my mind around it, but I start first with wrapping my heart around it.
Yeah, oh, nice.
Because I can't really do anything unless my heart and soul are there, and my heart is definitely in this. We had a lot of things to stabilize, a lot of things to lift up, and a lot of things to grow. We had reached a point, I think, as an organization where we seemed mostly focused on Central Ohio, only because, let's be honest, because the the legislature is here.
Right.
But a large part of what we do grows out of the needs around the state. And so for me, it was not just getting my heart and head around the work, but also making sure that as an organization, we were able to, and we are, able to be present and, mm-hmm. in the state, listening, but also participating. I sort of have this feeling that if you want people to show, you know, to show up with you, then you've got to go. So we go around the state, and I've also been able to just hire some of the – we had a good team already and before I got here, but we've been able to grow the team here at Aucoldy, Ohio, to include probably one of the best, if not the best, field director in the state and beyond the state. We have a Northeast Ohio regional organizer now. We have a Southwestern Ohio regional organizer, and we've been able to grow our fundraising staff and also our administrative staff. So
nice.
We actually positioned ourselves in ways that people know who we are, not just in Columbus, not just in the three C's, but all around the state. So when you ask me how do I get my head around that, again, I start with my heart, and then in terms of getting my head around it, we do have a plan. And part of it was to make our, you know, have our footprint be statewide and be a part of the issues that would grow up from the grassroots, and then also help everyone get turned in the direction of how do we make change in Ohio? How do we do this? And obviously the answer is together.
Yeah.
Well, there are three strategic goals of Aucoldy, Ohio, and I love that one of them is financial stability, because I think it's one of those things that, let's work on behind the curtains, but that's not something we want to put out there. So I like that is front and center. But we have to talk about number one, advance pro-equality legislation and public policies throughout Ohio. I'm new to Ohio. I've only lived in my life in New York City and Vermont, so Ohio is perhaps different than what I'm used to. What do I need to know as a new gay in Ohio about my rights here?
Well, let's start with the not pretty picture.
Yeah.
All right. And the not pretty picture is that you now live in a state where you can be fired legally just because of who you are. You can be denied housing. You can be denied a mortgage. You can be denied public accommodations. We also are not enumerated in the anti-bullying law, and yet 80% of bullying that happens in schools in Ohio occurs because either a student is gay or because someone thinks that they are gay.
Right.
We have no enumeration in the hate crimes law, and that is just abominable.
Yeah.
And we also, this sounds like a good figure, right? Because I'm going to say we're one of three states, but sadly we are one of three states where if you transition your gender, you cannot change it on your birth certificate. And then on top of that, just while I'm, you know, Ms. Good News here.
Yeah, because I'm good right now. I'm in the process of packing.
I'm going to uplift you a little bit more.
Please.
Just stick with me because I want you to feel welcome. We not only have a marriage inequality amendment, but we also have our very own, Ohio has its very own DOMA, Defense of Marriage Act. And we not only have a DOMA, but we have a supra-DOMA, which, again, it sounds like a good thing, right? Oh, my God, it's a supra-DOMA. But, in fact, what that means is not only is marriage itself limited to one man and one woman, but anything that remotely, possibly, even could ever look like a marriage. So civil unions or domestic partnerships are also banned by the DOMA statute. So that's the good news. But actually, there is good news. First of all, I could say that anecdotally is that when you have one-on-one conversations with people in Ohio, people are generally all about fairness.
Yeah.
And in fact, part of the history of Ohio has been one not only of jobs, but where people came to raise their families. So we have, you know, we had the Rubber City up there in Akron, the Steel City. We have the economic engine of manufacturing and business and banking in Cleveland. We have the mercantile and banking, and now really several, I think it's like more Fortune 500 companies per capita in Cincinnati than any other city. And then we have certainly a government and academic center and technology center right here in Columbus. So we really have a state that has a history of and was really built on families and jobs, and people came here for that and came here because they'd be treated fairly. And in fact, to me, one of the really proudest parts of Ohio's history is that we were part of the Underground Railroad.
Yeah.
An integral part. And in fact, during the Great Migration, families on trains came across Ohio and saw land that they could own and not be owned. So we just have a really strong, firm history of fairness, and you see it in people's eyes, you feel it in their hearts, and also, frankly, the numbers in terms of things like around non-discrimination, 7 out of 10 of registered voters in Ohio want us to be included in the non-discrimination law. So that's like anywhere between truly in above 70%, and in some cases in some of the polls up to 79% of Ohioans that are registered to vote say, well, yes, of course.
That's good groundwork.
That is good groundwork.
Okay.
And then in the same breath, I'm going to talk just a minute about non-discrimination, but in the same breath, the non-discrimination law in one form or another has been introduced. This is the sixth time, the one that we introduced in this session. The reason we think it's different is partly that we have a different approach. We are much more focused and much more pinpoint about including and keeping our allies with us, but also in moving those legislators that have been undecided to be with us.
Right.
And in fact, in the cohort of representatives and senators that came in, there are quite a few of them who are on the fence and have indicated that there is an openness to hear this and to think it through.
Well, I feel like in Vermont, you know, in my work in Vermont with the LGBT community in Vermont, there was this kind of a sense of, well, gosh, what should we work on next? And I would imagine that there's a similar question here. What should we work on next? Because the menu is so full. How do you go about choosing, okay, this is where we should focus our efforts?
Well, one of the reasons we're focused on non-discrimination is because we also see, while the tide is turning, certainly to an extent nationally, we also have done, you know, a lot of people kind of want to run up to marriage equality as if it's sort of the end all.
Right.
And we do have a marriage campaign, but it is a public education campaign. And the reason for that is that the numbers in Ohio right now are not very strong. They've improved, obviously, since when the Marriage Inequality Amendment passed, and we're very very intentional and very focused on it, but we also know at the same time, kind of like a company with multiple product lines, right? We can do more than one thing at once. We're capable of doing this, but we know that we need to pass non-discrimination and at the same time lift up that conversation, lift up the persuasion level, and lift up the state of Ohio, not just in the three C's, not just in the big cities, but across the entire state.
I don't know what the third C is.
Cleveland.
Got that one.
Columbus.
Got that one.
Cincinnati.
Oh, C. Cincinnati, not on my radar.
You are so in trouble, and all those people that were listening to you in Cincinnati have now stopped listening to you, and that's how it goes.
You can send those emails to Ken at thisshowisogay.com. Thanks, everybody, for that. Yeah, no, Cincinnati, totally not on my radar. I barely know where I am, Elizabeth.
Oh, I know the feeling, and I've come back to Ohio, but I have to say it's a big state. A, it's a big state, and B, the people here really are, there are very few people that when you sit down and talk to them will identify themselves as, you know, oh my gosh, I'm a hater, I want to discriminate against you.
Right.
It's actually once the issues are out there and people understand not only exactly with whom they are speaking, but also how unprotected our community really is. And
right.
How the laws really don't reflect all of us in Ohio, and that it is as if right now we've drawn a line around the state saying it's okay to hate here, it's legal. And
yeah.
Nobody wants to be from a state that does that.
No. No. One of the interesting things that I've noticed in my very short time living here in Ohio, the landscape is quite populated with LGBT organizations, which on the one hand is incredibly inspiring and not something that I felt like I really had in Vermont. On the other hand, as someone who is the executive director of Equality Ohio, and then again, that's you and not me, I would think, oh gosh, we have to think really intentionally about how we partner up with different organizations and how to not duplicate efforts but still maximize people's energy. Am I wrong in thinking there seem to be a lot of organizations?
Well, there are. You know, there's a lot of organizations, and yet we are the only statewide LGBT organization working on advocacy issues.
Right.
So what is kind of cool about that is that we don't just keep an ear to the ground. We actually listen, participate with partner in terms of helping both the agendas but also moving things forward with other organizations, helping them with everything from structure, if we can offer that, to organizing and training. And in the same breath, I mean, the and that was a deep in breath. I know I went, but on the other side of that is then we are able to partner and have, you know, because we have shown up, then we all also have people go there right with us and working with us. And it's frankly, it's not just LGBT organizations around the state. We work really closely with other organizations, with our ally organizations, because one of the assumptions, I think, is when you're an LGBT organization, well, that's, you know, that's all you work on,
right,
and that's how you're going to end discrimination. And frankly, it's a bigger question, and it certainly is in Ohio. So we work closely with people in the racial justice movement, in the social justice movement, in the economic justice movement. We work with people in labor. We work with people in business, and we work with people in faith communities and in faith organizing. And what we're finding in Ohio is that when we all come, you know, how do we, I think I said it earlier, how do we move this forward? Well, we know we move it forward together, but when we all come together, we actually can make change.
Totally.
It's not just legislators, but it moves our very self-same small communities, large communities, to do not just what I might think is the right thing, but to really work at a larger level to lift up issues and make sure that fairness and non-discrimination and equality,
yeah,
and justice, right? Because justice is not just for us.
It's look at that. Look what you did there.
Look what I did there.
It's like cleverness right there in the performance appraisal. I love it. Well, I have to ask you.
Oh, we're back to that performance appraisal. Oh,
well, I have to. I'm still kind of reeling from the idea that you guys have completely written off Cincinnati, so I want to move quickly past that.
Who wrote it off?
It's not the point, Elizabeth. Now, it's not the point. One of my favorite parts of having, we've had the great opportunity to have so many executive directors on the show doing so many different pieces of LGBT equality and moving things forward. And one of my favorite parts of having them on the show is acknowledging that, yes, you are an incredible leader. And as you said earlier, you have an incredible staff. These are not one-person efforts. I will give you the floor to extol the virtues of your incredible staff.
Well, I don't know that you really could give me a big enough and long enough amount of time to talk about it. This is a group of people from, and it is not just our staff. We have two different boards. We have a C3 and a C4 board that the people on those boards, our boards, are activists, but are also willing to work through some pretty tough issues in terms of policy. And plus, they put up with me. Come on. So that's just a
there's
large
that.
Shout out. Yeah, large shout out goes there. And then back to putting up with. I certainly enjoy the company of a staff that is participative, active, involved, engaged, and frankly, one of the things I really love about the group of people that we have right now and that we continue to grow at Equality Ohio is they bring their minds, they bring their spirits, and they bring their hearts every single day. So I feel like we're not just intellectually engaged, we're not just intentionally engaged in activism, but we work from a stance of love, not just for each other, but for the work we do, and also for this state. So I just feel like I have a spiritual team, and I have thought partners with me, and I also have people that know how to operationalize and get things done. So
I want to be a thought partner. I never use that phrase.
Well, I as everybody on this staff will tell you, I need a lot of them because I have a lot of ideas, they have a lot of ideas, but to really move something forward, you need to be able to think about it.
I'm totally putting out an RFP for thought partners. I'm going to work on that right now.
Are they going to be from Cincinnati, though?
Okay, you know what? It's not going well for you already.
circling back.
The shock that you would continue to push it is really, I'm floored, but you know, whatever works for you, Elizabeth.
That's how it goes.
And I was going to ask you, but I feel like maybe I already know the answer. We have those moments, and we all do, as we're pushing voices forward and we're trying to achieve equality and get more voices on the table, we have those moments that bring us down a little bit, that are more challenging. And certainly, as the plate is so full in Ohio and there's much work to do, we do experience setbacks every now and then. What is your style? What is your solution? How do you address those setbacks?
Well, there's a couple of things. I'll tell you the things I do to stay healthy, and then I'll actually really answer the question.
Yeah.
One of the things I do to stay healthy is I swim almost every day.
Look at you!
And I do Tai Chi almost every day.
Nice.
I'm also a musician, and I try to play music almost every day.
Love it.
So those are things that I do to kind of keep myself on an even keel and to not get too frayed around the edges. I think organizationally, we've already faced some things that have been, I think at the moment they hit you, they feel like, right? And for me, it is, I do not shirk them, and I don't step back in terms of, this doesn't really affect us, let's slow down a minute. I certainly meet every situation as with full on and right up front. But I don't know that this is the answer you're expecting, but I try to meet, no matter how hard or how tense or intense, I try to take a moment and just open up my heart and meet every situation with love.
Nice.
Even if it's a tough situation, even if I am having to say some things that perhaps some people might think are a little hard-edged, I make sure that the place that I'm coming from is one that is grounded first in love and second in kindness, and third, that I really try to make sure that I'm not being reactive.
Yeah. Which is hard sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot to react to.
Well, you know, it's true. And even when, I mean, there are times where even when I will let myself, allow myself to sound angry, but I realize that I am not exactly acting per se, but then I'm also allowing some emotion to come out and leak out because the situation calls for it. But I don't let it out if the reason that I'm doing it is just because I'm reacting.
Yeah.
There's just no value, and it helps no one.
That brings us closer to equality right there. See, I think we're well on our way.
Even in Cincinnati.
Okay, you know what?
You knew I was going there. You were waiting. The pause was there. You made me feel that way.
The degree to which you're trying to get me to move out of Ohio is, I don't even know what to do with it. But
I know. But, you know, I've talked to people that know you, and they're like, could you get him out of here?
I feel so welcome.
20-30 minutes. I got him. He'll be gone.
Oh, God, I can't wait to submit this to your board. So tell everyone where they can go to learn more about all the amazing things that Equality Ohio is doing.
Well, there's a couple places, but I would send you first to equalityohio.org.
Nice.
And there's all kinds of stuff, and that is the technical term, both legally and in activism. It's called stuff. Another place to go is the Why Marriage Matters Ohio website, which is whymarriagemattersoh.org.
Nice.
And there's all kind of cool stuff there, including some pretty amazing stories from people of faith and couples here in Ohio, and it's kind of a lot of fun. And then I guess this is where I give my phone number. No.
You can meet her at the pool at 6:30.
Actually 6, but oh my God, how do you know that? It's 6 a.m. is when they open, and I am often just kind of...
By the way, I meant 6 p.m., but okay.
Oh.
It's my bad. It's my bad.
No.
I just started swimming again, a lot harder than I remember.
Well, there is that when you haven't been swimming a while.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I figured if Diana Nyad can do it, I can do it.
What was up with that? Wow,
it was crazy. We had her on the show 5 years ago. She was one of the first guests we ever had on this show. And then I just saw those clips, and I'm like, wow, I barely made it through that interview because she was so amazing. And then she swam that long. So her stamina, more than mine. Awesome. Well, you guys are doing such incredible work. I've only been here for a short amount of time, and I've seen representatives out and about, and I've had conversations with folks who just extol the virtues of Equality Ohio and how you guys are really putting yourselves out there to bring the community together, to raise up voices of folks from all different cities, including cities that might not immediately spring to my mind. And so it's inspiring. And I, all joking aside, it actually does make me feel at home here, seeing the work that you all are doing, knowing that there are folks out there who are fighting on my behalf and who I can partner up with. And that's one of the things that I love about Equality Ohio, is that you can see, and folks should go to your website, because you can see opportunities to get involved. And that's a big deal.
Well, thank you. You're a little bit better salesperson than I am. But don't tell my board. They'll put that in my review. Now you're scaring me.
What an absolute treat. I really, you are a thought partner.
Oh, well, I'm liking that. Thank you.
Awesome. Elizabeth, please keep doing what you're doing.
I'm in. I'm in for the penny and the pound.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right, folks, that's it for this week's show. Get out there. Go make a difference. Go raise up the voices of your LGBT brothers and sisters. And remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?